At Brave New Teaching, our mission is to support teachers at all their various stages of the game. Whether you're just getting started or you've been in it for a while, we want to always be your go-to for ELA curriculum support.
To celebrate you, we are hosting an epic week in April called Workshop Week. During the week of April 15th through 19th, we are giving every single one of our Brave New Teachers the opportunity to take any of our five workshops for only $7.
And we're going to make this super simple. We are delivering the coupon code straight to your inbox. All you need to do is copy that code and paste it into the workshop of your choice, and you're set. You'll have two full weeks of access for only $7.
These workshops are pretty big and are normally valued at $50 each. So this is the perfect time to hop in and step up your curriculum game in teaching memoir, dystopia, poetry, and Shakespeare.
Our favorite.
Yes.
So make sure that you are opted into our email list, and you can get there by going to shop.bravenewteaching.com, and you will automatically get the code emailed to you mid-April. Thank you for being here, and have a wonderful week at school.
Well, hello and welcome back to Brave New Teaching, and welcome back to the second half of our interview with author Ruta Sepetys.
I can't even. It's still a little surreal to me that these are like in the world now.
Right. That these are in the world, and like, she was like so amazing and nice and like still talks to us. Like we had a full conversation, two dorked out teachers and a New York Times bestselling author. And like, she wasn't like, okay. And then like, she didn't like fire her publicist after, you know what I mean? She wasn't like, don't ever set me up on anything like that again.
Yes. Like,
she's just so awesome.
Well, there's something to be said, you know, and when Marie and I kind of sat down, you know, thinking about like the future of the podcast and where we're going and how badly we really wanted to talk to authors. The question for us was, well, why, you know, what is the benefit of an education podcast talking to authors? Because that space in between is kind of it can go a lot of ways. And it's interesting. And, you know, for Marie and I, our answer was, well, we want to expose our listeners to more of the possibilities of what can be in their curriculum. And I think there's nothing more inspiring than feeling like a connection to not only the books, but the authors behind books that are great for doing this kind of transformation, for moving, you know, we'll talk about in this episode, how do we tackle some of these skills that are really hard for kids? Well, sometimes that means updating the text that we're using to do it. But teachers don't have like tons and tons of extra time to read all the things or to fall in love with all the authors. So that's kind of where we came in, and we thought, well, why don't we help be part of this puzzle, that's that missing piece, and try to link up teachers and authors together so that we're kind of lifting that little piece of the burden and saying, yeah, okay, she's ready. The books are ready. Like, let's go, let's take them and let's move into the future.
Well, and something that just struck me when you were talking is talking about connecting the educators to the person behind the works. Same sort of thing happens in our own classrooms, right?
Okay.
Like,
yes.
we know as educators that this is a very, we're in the business of people, right? Young people for the most part, but we're in the business of people. And humanizing ourselves and the aspect of what we bring to our students and to their parents and to their families and blah, 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 and to the community is something that we often feel like we have to fight for, that transparency of like, but I'm a person too. Remember, I'm a person too. Just because I'm doing all of these things for all of these kids doesn't mean that I'm not a real life human. So anything that we can do for those people and humanizing the experience of a classroom teacher by connecting them to others outside of the world of education is so, for me, it's so critical in like just feeling like I'm not alone. I know I'm not alone as an educator, and there are people like our Brave New Teaching community around me, but hearing someone like a world famous author telling me that she understands and that she admires, and in such an authentic way, the plight of educators and of classroom teachers specifically, and like wants to be supportive and wants to create things that help us help our students create a better world. Like, it's just, I know it sounds really lofty. It sounds really like over the top, like, okay, Marie, you're getting really like edubabble philosophy-y, but it's what it is, right? Like, it's I've just lost all the words because I got excited.
Well, and you made me, but I think a final point would be another goal that we have for this podcast is that it's a tool for you to start conversations with admin. Yeah. You know, we do have, you know, some admin and shares and people who listen to the podcast, but we know that the majority of you who are listening are in the trenches. You're on the ground and you need the leverage to introduce new books into your curriculum. You need the reputation of certain things, right, in order to start that conversation. I mean, we talk a lot on this podcast about, we admire a lot of classics. Like, we do teach classics and we have no problem with that. Our problem and what we are hoping to provide teachers is intentionality.
Yes.
We are choosing this for this reason and we are behind it because of this. And then finding alternatives when the reason we were doing something before doesn't really match what it's supposed to be doing now.
Right. And when the intent and the outcome are not in alignment, then you need to do something a little bit different, right? And so that's what we are providing. Absolutely.
You need something to put in there, right? So like, right. That's what we're trying to give you. It's like, we can't just say like, down with blah, blah, blah. We need to like say, and here is.
Right. That is the bane of my existence. I'm like, don't do that anymore. And I'm like, so instead I
dot, dot, dot,
dot, dot, dot, raises eyebrows and has crazy eyes. Well, and so here's another thing. Like, again, if you need a little bit of backing, if you're talking to, I don't know, other people in your department, if you were talking to, and like, let's say you really want to include someone like a voice like Ruta Sepetys. This author has been invited to present at NATO, European Parliament, and the U.S. Capitol, the Library of Congress, and embassies worldwide. She was awarded the Rockefeller Foundation's prestigious Bellagio Fellowship for her studies on human resilience.
Ridiculous. She's,
I know. And like, and it's really coming from her passion about power of history and story to foster global dialogue and connectivity. This came out of her bio because I couldn't have said that better myself. Fostering a global dialogue and connectivity. Yes, we are global learners here in the 21st century. And let's bring in some literature that helps us with that and fostering that conversation. Okay, enough from just the two of us. Let's jump into the second half of this interview and make sure to head to the show notes or to bravenewteacher.com/camp so that you can get in on real time and even a little bit after the fact on some of these conversations with Camp Brave New Teaching, our summer series. If you're coming to us at a different time, we will still have all sorts of goodness there for you. So make sure that you check that out. And we will see you next week with our debrief and more classroom applications of all of the things that we're talking about. All right, cue the music.
You're listening to Brave New Teaching, and we are so much more than a podcast.
We give teachers the inspiration, support, and tools to challenge the status quo.
I'm Amanda, and I'm a former English teacher from Illinois.
And I'm Marie, and I'm a teacher from Southern California.
Join us at bravenewteaching.com to find out more about our courses, festivals, and get every episode's show notes.
We're so glad you're here. Enjoy the show.
I think, Ruta, you kind of already answered this, but I want to just give you the chance again for, you know, just the, because I can hear how passionate you are about this idea and the fuel for your writing. But in all of that research and writing and living, composing, in all of that you've done, which do you find to be more powerful? Is it fear or hope?
Oh, wow. Oh, wow.
I'll let you think on that.
No, you know, something came to me right away as you said that. First, thank you for such a thought-provoking question. And it's a question I would also love students to weigh in on.
Would you? Because we would talk about that as an essential question for a unit on one of your books. So you're already there and we didn't even prep you for that. That's how we do units around here, is by questions just like that one.
Perfect. So what do I find more powerful, fear or hope? I think it also depends how we define power. What is powerful?
100%.
When you said fear or hope, I had this immediate hit, this visual of stop and go. You know, fear stops you where hope propels you forward. Mm-hmm. That was the feeling that I got. And in now many, many years of interviews with true witnesses, I would answer that hope is more powerful because these true witnesses who experienced, I mean, terrible, terrible things, they've shared that fear acted as a red light, but hope may have, you know, been the thing that led them to hang on for just one more day. And that ended up resulting in their survival. So, and let's think about it, even with what I've spoken about my own fear, it stopped me from, we talk about a red light, but it stopped me from writing for over 20 years. And writer's block is fear. And we saw this during the pandemic. Fear is also a virus and stopped us. So my answer is, I think hope is more powerful because it facilitates progress and moving forward.
Yes. Awesome. I like that too.
Yeah, a great thesis on a summative assessment.
yeah. So that's one of the things. I know this is a sidestep from what, you know, maybe you were expecting, but that's kind of what we do at the podcast here is we try to help teachers move away from centering a novel as the only end all be all, because a lot of what's happening is we're assigning a book, assigning chapters, assigning questions, and then giving a test. And that's not serving students so well. And so one of the things that we urge teachers to try is instead to center a question that many texts could possibly answer and will answer with, you know, and provide different levels of complexity, right? That question could be answered by a sixth grader, but also by an 11th grader reading The Great Gatsby, or a ninth grader reading Salt to the Sea, or a 12th grader, right? On and on and on. And so that's kind of why I wanted to put you on the spot a little bit, because you just proved to me that that's a great essential question and I'm going to work on that.
Well, I love it. And I also know that a sixth grader might respond in a way and say that fear is more powerful, and yeah. I'll feel that they're absolutely right. You know,
oh,
so
yeah.
It's just a great question for discussion.
Good. Yes. Okay, Marie, take us to the next step.
Okay, I'm actually going to backtrack a little bit in our notes because I am fascinated by asking you about your research process. We've kind of scratched the surface of that a little bit, and just how do you? Okay, it's a two-parter. Bear with me.
Shocking.
Where does the inspiration for a new story generally come from? Like, does it just kind of happen? Or do you think like, here are these characters that I want to work with? Or yes, like, where does that formation come from? And then when you're going to begin researching, because they are so amazingly real and historical, your novels, where does that process begin? And how does that take you on its path?
Well, I'll start with the first question about, you know, how do I come up with these topics that I'm interested in writing about? My first three books, Between Shades of Gray, Out of the Easy, and Salt to the Sea, were all based on my family's personal experiences. So I wrote those books from the inside out.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, you run out of family stories. And so, and fortunately, I'm so lucky to do school visits, to have the opportunity to work with students, because the ideas often come when I'm on tour, on a book tour. That's how The Fountains of Silence came. That's set in Spain. The students said, would you write about the dictatorship of Franco? You know, after Franco died, our country signed the Pact of Forgetting. And so we don't know our own history. And when I was in Romania, at a school visit, a high schooler said, our parents talk about what happened in the 80s, but we don't even understand the history. Could you write about it? So those books were presented by students. And now, like I say, it's evolved. I just returned from a book tour in Czechia and Bulgaria and Romania. And there were readers who were bringing me family stories. Can you imagine the honor
that, is so
that this
cool.
is? I was crying. I had chills. Like, and I kept thinking, I want you to tell your story. I want you. But now those pieces of history that I want to write about come when I'm on tour and working with schools and teachers and different publishers. And I have a list of like 26 ideas that I'm working on. So then, okay, I have an idea. How do I go about researching?
Right. And then you, right?
Right. And I have to say, I love the research so much that one day I'm waiting for someone to actually say, you know, I think you're more of a researcher than a writer, Ruta. And when I'm reading your books, I can tell that you love the research. And because I do, I spend at least a year or two reading about the time period and the events that I want to write about. And that's because I'm writing about a time period that I myself did not experience, that I did not live through. What right do we have to history other than our own? I take that question very seriously. So what I do is I partner with true witnesses. That's why my books are set in time periods that aren't, let's say, they're not in the 1700s or 1800s. If I have access to those true witnesses, I want to partner with them. They're my research partners. They're my co-writers. And the reason I spend 2 years reading is before I sit down with a human being who has experienced something very difficult, it would be disrespectful for me to expect them to educate me on this piece of history. So
right, to I want to read in completely. Yeah,
exactly. What happened here?
I need
all of the background info so when I can be truly present with those witnesses, and that's the most. I'm even touching my, like, you know, rubbing my hands together. It's the most tangible part of the process. Those interviews, and I guess I shouldn't even call them interviews, because now over the years, I've learned that whatever I think I need to know and questions that I might need to ask, no, what's most important are what these human beings have to say. Mm-hmm. And I need to try to hone my skill of listening and just listen. And as they are sharing what happened, this is when the characters are coming to life. The setting comes to life for me. And I build in about an hour after each interview to take notes and sketch out mm-hmm. scenes. And I already have that 2 years of nonfiction, memoir, testimony, academic papers, all of the research that I've done. Then I have that as a base. So when I sit down with the human beings, everything just kind of comes together. And then, when I say everything comes together, an idea forms.
Right.
And it's so important that everyone listening knows that I am a terrible writer. But I'm a decent rewriter, you know? Mm-hmm. My first drafts are such crap. I mean, and sometimes at school visits, I will take in the first page of Between Shades of Gray and the first page of the published Between Shades of Gray. And when they see my draft, I hope it gives them courage to realize that I really suck. But this is why revision is right. so important. It's so
important. Why it's a process. Yeah.
It's why
and resilience.
Yes, persistence. Exactly.
Resilience, persistence, so and the integrity that you are describing yes. that you just hold, and that you hold your work up to a standard, because, I mean, you said it would be disrespectful not
yes.
to. I think that is something that is so amazing in a world of fast fashion and short form content that our students, our kids, my own kids, It's not that they have a short attention span. It's that they're trained for immediacy. And so they have the maybe capacity for a longer attention span. And so to hear you talk about that integrity and how you spend 2 years before you even start that.
I do, but it's like an investigative process. I tell students, yeah. it's like being a detective. I am hunting down clues. I'm interviewing people. I'm making lists of questions. And in the book, The Fountains of Silence, there was a piece of information that was so compelling that when everyone read it, they said, whoa, are you kidding me? I could not track down enough supporting information to feel comfortable putting that in the book. Yeah. And my publisher kept saying, Ruta, you're going overboard. This is so compelling. And it's fiction. And I said, yeah, but it's this information has consequences, and I don't yeah. feel that I can put it in. And so, you know, I take it
yeah.
too seriously, I think.
I mean, I beg to differ, because so much of what we do is teaching information and media bias and information consumption and weighing what is truth. So I would agree with the way that you do it. Yeah.
Oh, well, thank you. And I do love the hunt. And I do know that piece of information that I'm looking for, I know that it will reveal itself. So yes. at some point, you know, I'll be able to write a sequel or something mm-hmm. to Fountains of Silence, you know, and be able to include it, but not quite yet.
Faith in the process there. Yeah, that's really cool.
This episode is brought to you by Curriculum Rehab by us, the team here at Brave New Teaching. It is the first and only teacher PD of its kind, a course to help teachers like you by guiding you through creating your own personal framework for curriculum. You make it work for you, your students, and your unique situation because nobody else knows what the kiddos in your classroom need the way that you do. Curriculum Rehab takes all of the resources available to you, all of the lessons, the assessments, the activities, all of the texts, everything that could possibly be there for you, and it helps you organize what you actually need in order to attain your teaching objectives. These are the strategies that Amanda and myself have used in our own classrooms, have developed over very long years of teaching and figuring things out, combined together to create this framework and these strategies that we can guide you through. This course will give you the tools you need for a complete curriculum overhaul or to start from scratch. Wherever you are on that continuum, it does it all for you and with you on your timeline. So start today, do a little bit more in a couple of months, and then pick it up next summer. It's teacher PD the way it should be, on your own time. Head to curriculumrehab.com/course for more information, or just head to the show notes for this episode. We cannot wait to see you there. It's finally time to take control of what goes on in your own classroom and create the curriculum of your dreams. All right, let's get back into the show.
I have another kind of, I'm going to twist us back into the classroom again and kind of put, you know, Ruta at the table with a group of teachers deciding how to use your books in the classroom. So Ruta, one of the big decisions that English teachers are making when they create a unit is whether or not they're going to focus a whole unit on one single text or a variety. Like it's a kind of, there's like a short list. Maybe the list is grouped together by genre or theme or question. And I'm kind of curious what, if you kind of got to sit at the table and think about it, do you think your books lend themselves more to a whole class reading experience, you know, a group of 30 all reading together, having this communal experience? Or do you think maybe your books would fit better as a choice or elected experience with a smaller group or an individual student that encounters your titles? I mean, we'll go ahead and say that both options are brilliant, but I just kind of love to hear from your perspective, you know, where do you think your books fit in that equation of options?
First, can I just say these are great questions. These are great thought-provoking questions that I haven't been asked before. And I would love any chance I get to sit down with teachers. First, that's a gift. But I guess it would depend on the amount of time that, you know, the teacher might have for this unit. And also maybe the charisma and interest of the students. I notice at some schools, they prefer to give a bit of an introduction, but not a deep dive. If it's an introduction, then I think collectively as a class to discuss, let's say with my book, Salt to the Sea, how and why history holds secrets and why history might be hidden and unknown. And what are the benefits of bringing history out of the dark and giving voice to those people who never had a chance to tell their stories, you know, things like that. Then if there's time for a deeper dive, I think working in smaller groups might allow for, let's say, deeper character examination in Salt to the Sea. I tell the story through the alternating viewpoints of four different characters, all in first person, you know, to examine things like, why did the author choose this perspective of first person and alternating perspective? Also, there are themes and Easter eggs in, I mean, all through Salt to the Sea, and how these themes of, because the chapters open with being a hunter and being hunted, you know, being the hunted versus the hunter. And then these Easter eggs like Emilia's pink hat and the amber swan. And I would tell teachers though to consider what we've already touched upon are joint reading opportunities that might exist in the school or the community. So in one community, they read Salt to the Sea. Their seventh graders read it alongside elderly women in an assisted living facility who were in their late 80s. And some of them had experience in World War II. And these older people were so delighted and nourished and inspired by the perspectives of the young people. And on the flip side, the young people were so interested in what these older people had to say. There's been, if again, if you're doing a deeper dive, you could perhaps do the message in a bottle exercise. During my research for Salt to the Sea, something I relied heavily upon was this message in a bottle that was discovered from one of these refugee ships. And doing an exercise with students about, if you were to put a message in a bottle today, you know, what are you saying? Mm-hmm. What do you hope would find it? And
so cool.
And for Between Shades of Gray, again, if you were able to do a deeper dive, Between Shades of Gray tells the story of a 15-year-old Lithuanian artist who's forced to, she has 10 minutes to pack and flee to, and she's sent to a death camp in Siberia. I've seen some schools do this exercise. If you have 10 minutes to pack, what do you pack? And then they have the students take a photograph of the items that they're going to pack, and they discuss it. They discuss why this was important. And one that was so moving to me, a student had her mother sit in the suitcase, and she said,
"Oh my God,
this is all I need. Like, I just want my mom, you know, if I'm going, that's all I need." And to see students compare like that and discuss. So a deeper dive, smaller groups maybe allow you to go into those deeper dives, whereas an all classroom read will really allow you to explore big picture. I mean, I don't know. Maybe one of the listeners will share something. And the other thing that I encourage them to do is work with the publishers of these books. In my case, it's Penguin Young Readers Groups. They have free discussion guides, free resources, in many cases, discounts. And, you know, maybe you can finagle a free classroom set or something like that.
I keep almost saying, are you sure you never wanted to be a teacher? Because you think like a teacher. Like those, you do. You have the sensibility of thinking through the actual, like, real life application in a classroom. It's something that it just happens.
No, and if I, maybe I sound like I want to be a teacher. I have learned so much from teachers while touring and seeing how they're using the book in the classroom. Hundreds and hundreds of different examples that are so inspiring and give me insight to the work that I created. And as an author, imagine you write a book and you think you know what your book is about because you wrote it. No, and then you meet with you meet with readers, and the readers, they tell you what your book is about, and that's facilitated by a teacher, and it's mesmerizing and so rewarding.
Oh, what an amazing receptive way to view your audience, because I know not all artists necessarily interact with their audiences in such a fashion. It's like, no, I created this and this is what it is, versus it's very reader responsey, if you will, to have a, like, be able to say, this is what I intended. And also, I'd love to hear your interactions with the text. Like, that's so cool.
Well, I feel a little distance though, because perhaps if I created the entire plot, but because history writes the majority of my stories, I don't feel like I can be as clutchy.
Yeah, you get to be a conduit. And I just think that that's I have no other words other than that's very cool. Well, friends, unfortunately, we are going to have to cut this conversation a little bit short right now, because we have just gotten into so much amazingness. I know. I'm normally more eloquent than this. So I just, listeners and Ruta and Amanda, thank you for just bearing with me in this moment right now. But I have to tell you, friends, we are going to extend this episode into one of our extended episodes for Happy Hour. So if you are a member of Brave New Teaching Happy Hour, get ready, because coming your way very soon, we are going to have an extended episode, because we're going to keep this conversation going, dig in a little bit more about education and about what this can and will look like in our classrooms. And let's just peel back the layers, as you said earlier, Ruta. But I want to say thank you so much for joining us. And if you want to get your ears on this extended episode, make sure that you head to the show notes for this episode and you can join Happy Hour. But before we let our regular listeners go, Ruta, will you tell everyone where they can, first of all, get in contact with you, and where people can find you through social media, through your website, etc.?
Yes, thank you. Because I'm I'm passionate about talking about the books, but I'm a very poor salesman and I need to share where you can find me. I am on Instagram at Ruta Sepetys author, on Facebook at Ruta Sepetys, Twitter, if it still exists, at Ruta Sepetys.
We'll see.
Yeah. And my website. My website has a lot of resources and always has my event schedule. And it's very difficult, rutasepetys.com. So if you just go to the URL, historyishiding.com, that will take you to my website, historyishiding.com. Yeah.
And we will have all of that linked in our show notes as well. And you had mentioned actually when we were chit-chatting just before we started recording that you would love to be able to talk to teachers, to teaching teams, even to classrooms. So the types of contact you would like to get is to be able to even interact in that way, correct?
Correct. Either to be able to provide resources to teachers who are thinking of using one of the books in the classroom. And if they embark upon that voyage to use one of the books in the classroom, I would like to support, whether that's answering questions that the students might have. Those can be written questions. It can be via a Zoom interacting with the teacher and discussing different ways to bring the history to life for the students.
So how lucky are we to have you, Ruta? I'm so blown away by your generosity, thoughtfulness, and we're so grateful that you were joining us on the podcast today.
Absolutely.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much. And friends, again, if you are part of our membership for Brave New Teaching Happy Hour, hold tight because we have our extended episode coming. And if you would like to join us, just head to bravenewteaching.com or to the show notes. Thank you again. And we will see you in our extended episode.
Bye.
Friends, we know that that was a lot. Between last week's episode and this episode, that was a lot of talky, but it is a podcast, so that's generally what our job is. We do want to, I hear myself like, wait, actually, that's literally what you signed up for when you hit play. Mm-hmm. We want to say thank you for hanging out with us. If you have not already joined us for Camp BNT, make sure that you do so because we have some really great stuff from Ruta Sepetys herself coming towards you and towards our friends who are joining us for camp. Camp BNT is totally free. We do have some perks and some goodies for members of Happy Hour. So if you are part of our Happy Hour community, our subscription podcast feed, get even more excited because there's even more goodies coming your way. But yeah, next week we got a whole debrief coming your way.
And I just want to say thank you to Ruta and her team for all of their kindness. They're so organized. They were just so accommodating and delightful. And really, honestly, I know like Marie and I were on the receiving end of that, but it's because she believes in teachers. She believes in you. She believes in the work that schools are doing. And I hope that if you didn't catch that a couple of times in the interview, you know how much Ms. Sepetys just really wants to be part of schools. And she did tell us, contact her. So I want to leave this. We'll remind you in camp, but a lot of authors would love to talk to students. And with Zoom and Google Hangouts, like it's not even that hard. It's worth reaching out. And she said she loves talking to teachers and students. And we're just so thankful for all of the willingness to share time, energy, calendars, all of that. Thank you to Ruta and your team. We can't wait to have you back on the show.
Absolutely. And hopefully it is very, 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 very soon. So with that, friends, we are going to say have a wonderful week. If you're still at school, have a wonderful week at school. Otherwise, just, have a good one. We will see you next time.
Bye.
Thanks again for listening to Brave New Teaching.
We'd love to keep the conversation going over on Instagram.
And while you're there, check out the links in our bio for the most up-to-date events going on in the Brave New Teaching community.
Thanks for being here and have a great week at school.